Hello and welcome to a tired edition of the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio is...
a tired Jason Rosenbaum.
And...
and a somewhat exhausted but caffeine-infused Joe Manis.
Yeah, I haven't had enough caffeine, as I should have. Jason has a better excuse than all of us. He has a baby at home.
Who voted for the first time yesterday. I committed massive voting fraud.
This is Chicago.
It is St. Louis City where everybody votes six times. So, yeah, I'm just kidding.
He just stuck a skid sticker on.
Yeah,
that was a serious issue.
That was it.
Yeah, so. But what happened Tuesday was serious on a number of levels.
Yeah, so let's get right down to it. Most of the results weren't too surprising, but the margins were what really surprised me. Joe, get into it here.
Okay, county executive's race. St. Louis County Executive Charlie Dooley was stomped by County Councilman Steve Stenger for the Democratic nomination.
Stomped, trounced. What are all the other ones that reporters were using?
Stenger got 66% of the vote.
That's huge.
And the county came out, there was about a 30% turnout, which was 50% higher than what the county election people had projected to the state. So there was a much larger than expected turnout in the county. Stenger won big, big, big. Now, the issue becomes, as I wrote and as you, Chris had in his radio report, is what impact this has in November. Is because even though Stenger won big, he had huge labor support, mostly African Americans. Most African-American officials were with Dooley, even though neither he nor Dooley tried to make race an issue. It was underneath the surface. Mm-hmm. And it looked like that on election night even, Stenger was already trying to reach out a bit and trying to quell all the nasty tension that may have still been between the two campaigns because they both ran pretty nasty ads. I mean, Dooley appeared to be somewhat conciliatory in his speech.
And afterward, when he was asked by reporters, his response to, if he was going to support Stenger was, I support all good Democrats. So a little bit enigmatic, but
yeah, I'm assuming he's going to come around, but I think there'll be some, private discussions, maybe some intermediaries. I thought it was telling that the county council meeting that was scheduled for today got canceled this morning, which tells you that there were still some people who were still
at the behest of Chairwoman Hazel Irby, too, who is a Dooley ally.
Yeah, who may have felt that it was just too draining for everybody. One thing that I didn't mention in the stories, there's probably a whole lot of people in key posts in county government who are busy today getting their resumes together because whether Stenger wins or Republican Rick Stream wins in November, there's a lot of major people in St. Louis County who are are very soon going to be out of jobs.
They're all going to be gone. Yeah. No mincing words. Everybody who is a political appointee of Dooley, not everybody, but I'd say the majority of them are not going to survive after January.
Yeah, well, the chances are a number of them will probably be leaving or forced out earlier. And I'm not going to mention any names, but there was a number of them, including County Operations Director Gary Earls, who was at the pre-election rally with Dooley. And, I mean, those people are going to be going. And the only issue will be how soon. When 10 years ago, when Claire McCaskill knocked off Governor Bob Holden in the Democratic primary, that happened. A lot of that happened on the state level where people left because they knew that their jobs were, whether it was going to be her winning in November or it turned out to be Republican Matt Blunt winning in November. So you had a wholesale of a parade of people leaving. And I think you're going to see that in St. Louis County government in the next couple months.
Let's take a step back for a second, though, for the Democratic side. So Charlie Dooley has been in office for 10 years.
Almost 11. Be 11 in October.
Republican after Republican had tried to defeat him. Everybody from Gene McNary to Bill Corrigan. Some came close. Some didn't. And then last night, a county councilman with, a lot of labor support, a lot of money, won with 66% of the vote. Let's not mince words here. This was a butt-kicking of epic proportions. It was a disastrous showing for Dooley, and I think it was indicative of a couple of things. First of all, it was an incredibly nasty race, and hopefully the Stream staying a race has a higher plane of, you know, humility.
I predict that it will not, even if Stream says he's trying to keep it positive. Republican allies will make sure it's
but
not.
But what happened with Dooley? I mean, I think everyone kind of just came to this conclusion that his campaign was at best listless and at worst incompetent. I mean, it just seemed like his campaign this time was not nearly as sharp as it was in 2010 or when he was first elected. What do you think happened?
Well, there was a couple of key things. Now, I want to emphasize, I actually have said this story several times, that when you get Vince Shamel told me this once. He's a St. Louis mayor when he ran for governor and got blown out. He said, when you get blown out, you realize it's bigger than yourself, so you tend to sleep well because you don't micromanage what you could have done differently. So to some degree, the Dooley camp may not do any self-analysis, which in some ways I think might be a mistake. A couple things. A, labor, that all those labor defections last year, huge. St. Louis Labor Council and some others had been key in resurrecting Dooley's candidacy in 2010 when he was in trouble during that huge Republican wave. They were all with Stanger. I think that helped Stanger a lot. That wasn't the only factor, but I think that was one of them. Number two, for whatever reason, the Dooley campaign, amid all the attack ads, never ran any positive spots with Dooley talking into the camera or highlighting his achievements. That surprised me because actually Dooley can be very compelling when he's talking about his achievements. And I was surprised that even at the end that they didn't have that where he himself is putting himself out there.
Yeah.
Because make no mistake about it, a lot of this election was a referendum on him, whether they wanted to make it or not. And I don't feel like his campaign actually ever made a strong case for him. They spent most of their time trying to raise doubts about Stanger. And that's part of a campaign. But part of it also is to say, why me?
Yeah.
You know, why you should stay with me. And that he made it in his speeches, but never in any of the ads. And most voters just saw the ads.
And so, if Dooley's not defining himself, it makes it easier for Stanger to paint a picture of a candidate who's, you know,
and I think
had FBI investigations into county government.
I think he made his own share of mistakes. I think he lost this election the moment he proposed that budget that shut down half the parks. I think after that, it was pretty much over. And it was just downhill from there because that was already a massive mistake, and he made a lot of other ones over that two-year period that just accumulated. We'll see the township results eventually, but my assumption is he got destroyed in the eastern and central part of the county. He probably lost like Florissant and Hazelwood and got, you know, just decimated in south and west county. And we'll have to see. That's speculative. But
yeah, because I think the parks thing brings up something. Because I agree with Jason that probably set the stage for this huge defeat. Well, the whole parks proposal had been really an effort to get the council to raise the county income tax, which is just a small tax. Well, it was a maneuver that failed because instead of being about why they needed more money, it ended up being about the proposal to shut down the parks, which for a while later, I mean like a year ago, Dooley was initially denying that he proposed it. But his administration had. My point being is that he got some bad advice on this strategic move, and that whole debacle had huge fallout 3 years later. I totally agree with Jason. I think that
now
set the stage.
Now let's go to the Republicans. We had a detour there.
Yes. Well, Republican Rick Stream also soundly won his race. He ended up with 68% of the vote. Although,
yeah, as I pointed out,
although, as Joe pointed out, you know, 2/3 of the county voters took a Democratic ballot.
Yeah.
So that does not vote
and
well.
And Stream garnered fewer votes than Dooley did.
Yeah.
And that's always a danger sign. When you win big in your primary and the huge loser in the other one got more votes than you did, the Republicans have got to think
now,
about that.
I'm not surprised by the outcome because Stream started running TV ads and Pessosa didn't have enough money to do it. Though I think that there was some concern that Pessosa might stage something of an upset because he had these signs that said stop the merger on it, which kind of appeals to people. And he had been campaigning for longer than
And he
Stream.
Worked hard. Tony Pessosa, the Green Party alderman, worked very hard.
Green Park alderman.
I mean, Green Park, sorry.
And if a lot of Republicans took Democratic ballots
yeah.
to vote against Dooley.
So I think I'm not surprised on that aspect. I think the conventional wisdom has been, though, that Stenger is a much harder opponent to beat than Dooley because Stenger has already picked up that anti-Dooley mantle, you know, for the last 2 or 3 years and has a track record of opposing Dooley on some issues, not all. And I'm sure that the Republicans are going to point that out. But I don't know to what effect. I mean, let's just be honest here. The St. Louis County Republican Party is not the strongest organization in the state. I mean, if you look at the race for assessor, which a lot of people weren't looking at, their unanimously endorsed candidate, who I believe's name was Joshua McQueen, lost 67-32 to a placeholder opponent, basically ending any shot that they have of winning that race against Jake Zimmerman. That to me shows that their organization in the county, just on that example, is not super, super strong. And they're really going to have to put all hands on deck in order to beat a candidate who already probably has better name recognition because of all the ads and will have labor support that's going to be pretty substantial.
Well, what Republicans, I think, are going to be hoping for is that the racial tensions will continue. Although Stenger did campaign north and trying to reach out now, I think they're going to hope that there's a divided Democratic Party. I also think that Stream's camp will start hammering Stenger over the merger/reunification issue because Stenger, of all the candidates, was the most noncommittal on it.
Yeah.
And while he made clear that he said he wasn't keen on some of the proposals that were out now, but he wanted to see what the study said and all this and that. The Republicans are going to be hammering him to try to either make him move, you know, one way or the other. And because I think Stream's camp will see this merger issue as a way to garner votes. However, word of warning.
Stream has been consistently against it.
Right. But a word of warning. Corrigan tried that tack in 2010. And it didn't work.
No, against an arguably more damaged opponent.
Yes, Dooley.
It'll be interesting, but I don't know. I don't know if it's going to reach the levels that it reached of this primary as far as competitiveness or in terms of rancor. I don't think we should write off Stream completely because I think he has a lot of endearing elements of his candidacy. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and I think another thing that the county results showed is, A, I believe that it was the Democratic fight, that largely was responsible for the county having an unusually high 30% turnout for an off year. And I think that had an impact in a number of other statewide races and issues. And I think this is the reason Amendment 1, the right to farm thing, almost lost.
Yeah.
It was because the huge turnout in St. Louis County where over 60% voted against it.
Well, let's get into into those ballot initiatives. Jason, we should probably go to the transportation tax first. Break it down for us.
Well, I think that was the most substantively important one out of the five. I think there were five. It's been a long night.
Yes, there were five.
Because I think regardless of whether it passed or failed, it was going to have a pretty long-ranging impact on the state's transportation policies. And I think it was always going to be a difficult lift for this to pass because it was such a large tax increase. Some people have said it's the largest tax increase in the state's history. I thought the proponents actually did a much better job of presenting the case than I expected them to. Their ads, while not mentioning the fact that it was a tax increase and maybe overselling the safety aspect of it, I think were generally pretty good, whereas the opponents didn't have enough money for ads at all. But it doesn't matter because it lost, I believe, 58-42, a pretty substantial loss for that.
Looking at it right now, 59-41.
Even bigger.
Is how it came out.
It didn't really do well anywhere. It didn't do well in St. Louis County or St. Louis City. It did a little bit better in Kansas City, but not spectacularly. And in the rural areas, it didn't really catch fire. And I was kind of surprised by that because I thought maybe it would have had more appeal there if certain road projects were going to be allocated.
Well, Speaking of where it performed and where it didn't perform, we should point out that our audience can go to sdlpublicradio.org and check out
the absolutely fantastic map that Brent Jones put together for us.
Yeah, it's some really cool work. You can see, you know, where these amendments were popular and where they weren't. And I think they're really illuminating.
Well, so it really shows the where the numbers came from. Now, one of the things that Jason brought up that I wanted to reemphasize is that there was a provision in Amendment 7 that would have barred increasing the state's gasoline tax. And I think that rankled some people as that information got out, because Missouri has one of the lowest, if not the lowest, gasoline tax in the country.
I think it did.
And I think that fed into it, even though backers of the proposal said that even if you raise the gasoline tax, you wouldn't be able to collect enough money. I think one of the reasons they put that provision in there, and they also had a thing that was to protect some of the truckers, was try to appease the trucking industry. I think the trucking industry lost big with this, because the voters felt like they shouldn't be footing the whole bill for this. Now, rural Missouri also was against toll roads. So I think the Missouri Department of Transportation and others are really going to have to figure out what's going to be the alternate proposal. But another victor is Governor Jay Nixon, who opposed this. He didn't campaign against it, but he opposed it.
So do you think Claire McCaskill's a loser on this? I think she is.
Yeah, I think so, too. Not a huge amount, because you've noticed she was quiet about it the last few weeks. Yeah. I think she saw where it was going. But I think the governor can basically say, I told you so. He was, for whatever reason, he decided not to campaign against it, but he made sure
right.
that people knew he was against it. So some people may go to him and say, okay, let's come up with something new.
Now, the other amendment, before we get to the right to farm, the amendment about protecting electronic communications from search and seizures passed, I believe, in every county in the state.
It overwhelmingly.
It was by far the biggest winner.
75-25.
Of course, there was no organized opposition to it.
No. Yeah. And,
there wasn't really an organized support of it other than the ACLU, but they
right.
didn't really spend
no.
any money.
I mean, the argument against it was redundant, but if it's redundant, there's really no good reason to vote against it.
I disagree about it being redundant. I think it's going to have
exactly.
actual impact.
Yeah, I think it will, too. Some law enforcement agencies didn't like it.
So there was another one on the right to bear arms that passed, and I'm not surprised by that at all. Those types of bills always do well in rural areas of the state. I think that didn't do well in the cities, but the thing that failed was the veterans lottery ticket, which is kind of rare that a ballot item loses despite having no organized opposition. And I think part of it just there's a bit of an aversion in some parts of the state to gambling. I think that's one thing. But this might have been a situation where the editorials against this, because I think it was pretty much across the board no, might have actually made a difference, because it wasn't high profile and maybe people went to those sort of things to look for it. But obviously none as close as right to farm.
Well, before we get to that, I do want to say something about the gun amendment. Some of the backers see this as the first step to try to advance an open carry law in Missouri. I think you're going to see fights over that. I think there's going to be some who say that – some may go to court and claim that this means that businesses can't bar guns from their stores like restaurants or wherever. I think there's going to be a lot of legal fights over what it means and what it doesn't mean. So I think this measure – while it wasn't as controversial as some of the earlier ones that almost got through the legislature a year or so ago, I think you haven't heard the last of Amendment 5.
Yeah,
I would agree. Let's get into another one that is a little bit interesting legally, the right to farm.
Yes. Now, I can't tell you how many non-political people asked me about this, because I think that people were eminently confused about this particular amendment. And you know, at its basic core, this amendment essentially acts as a mechanism for people to challenge laws that are deemed hostile to agriculture. So let's say HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, passed another law regulating dog breeders. They could probably sue, point to that amendment, and try to get it knocked down. And obviously opponents to this, which includes HSUS, who spent a lot of money to try and defeat it, that could apply to a lot of different things, whether it's controlling CAFOs or...
Well, explain what CAFOs are.
Confined animal feeding operations.
Which are these huge hog and chicken farms. There are several of these corporate-owned farms out in rural Missouri. And you have some of the local communities there who have been trying to regulate them as far as waste collection, runoff, smell. There's predictions that passage of this is going to mean there's going to be some legal fights by the corporations saying that they can't be regulating them.
So it's right now, I think it's up by about 2,000 votes. I think there's going to be a recount over this because it's below 0.5%.
Yeah, because this is 2,000 votes after out of about 900,000.
And, you know, this kind of goes back to what I've been saying for a long time. When an amendment or initiative has organized opposition that's spending money, it's far more likely to fail. I think that the veterans lottery ticket was kind of an exception to that rule. But this had a lot of money trying to kill it. And I think it had a pretty well-heeled organization.
At the end.
You got to give credit to both the HSUS, who put money into it, to people like Joe Maxwell and Wes Schumacher, who I think were able to kind of develop a message against this. And they came very, very close to defeating this. And I think you're right. Just like the gun thing, I don't think we've heard the last of this because it could – At its most benign, have no impact on agriculture policy, and its most extreme could have a massive impact on regulations in the state.
Because one of the things I mentioned earlier is that there's some contention that some farmers want these confined facilities to be able to fence in deer for organized deer hunts. That bill was vetoed by the governor. There are some who claim that some of those farmers may go to court citing the right to farm amendment, that claiming that deer are livestock. There are some who are claiming that marijuana growers may go to court and say that, look, this grants us, you can't bar us from growing this. You may be able to bar us from selling it if for another law. But I think there's going to be a number of legal challenges on this.
I agree.
And you wonder about Attorney General Chris Coster and Secretary of State Jason Kander, two Democrats who came out for it at the end. And apparently St. Louis Mayor Slay, without anybody knowing about this, was doing robocalls
bizarre
the night before the election for this. So this is going to be a rather – there's going to be a lot of discussions about fallout of this.
I'm not really sure. You know, I don't know what the fallout will be for Coster and Kander. I do know that they went against the grain of a lot of Democratic groups, and I think that the grassroots of the party are probably not happy that they supported it.
Well, and there is some little bit of danger for Rick Stream because Stream showed up at this pro-Amendment 1 event in Kirkwood last week that I covered – to say he wasn't in favor of the right to farm. And it lost big in St. Louis County. In fact, if you'd had a few thousand more St. Louis County voters, it probably would have lost statewide because over 60% of St. Louis County voted against it. That's the main reason it's so close statewide. So for someone like Stream, it causes a problem. He, you know, you want to be part of the statewide Republican, share the Republican philosophy on some of these issues. But on the other hand, what's popular statewide is not always what's popular in the St. Louis area.
While we're on the subject of these ballot initiatives, we should quickly mention a few bits of news that came down yesterday about November ballot initiatives.
Yes. Now,
So one of the key things is that one of the early voting propositions did not gather enough votes in four out of the six districts.
Just, even though they turned out a whole bunch, they didn't turn out enough good ones.
Which is a disaster.
Totally.
An absolute disaster.
It wasn't even close.
Totally
either.
for the Democrats.
It's a disaster for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's a disaster on Coster's organization because his former chief of staff was leading the effort and he had at least given verbal support for
it. Well, Coster put some money in it.
But second of all, you really have to question the priorities here for the Democrats who have made such a big deal nationally about minimum wage increases. The same donors that donated in 2006 to raise the minimum wage donated to this effort that went nowhere. You have to question whether that money would have been better spent trying to get a minimum wage increase on the ballot this year. But to me, Democrats have made that issue a turnout mechanism the same way Republicans have made gay marriage or other things. They only put it on the ballot if there's a competitive election nationally. And unfortunately for workers who would actually benefit from something like that, presumably, it's not going to be on the ballot this year because they decided to do early voting instead. So that's one thing. The second thing is also
But if they're going to do early voting, it's a whole thing like playing poker. Go big or stay home. If you're going to do this, make sure you do it right.
But let's not talk about what's not going to be on the ballot. Yes. Let's talk about what is.
Yeah, go ahead.
So
yes.
Teacher evaluations, which will likely be one of the really contentious
Well, it's in
issues.
Effect. It does away with teacher tenure.
Yes, and it does away with teacher tenure. It'll be on the November election. And, of course, this is one of the big things that Rex Singfeld is.
Yeah, I think that's going to behind. It's going to be the most controversial ballot item by far.
This reminds me a lot.
I think it'll drive out a lot of people.
And I think this is going to generate a lot of turnout on both sides. And this reminds me of 1994 when there was the Hancock 2 fight, which was a tighter restrictions than the Hancock restrictions we have about state spending. The education groups came out against it because they were seeing that it could affect school districts. And I remember Hancock being chased by teachers in downtown St. Louis during a rally. My point being that this is the type of thing that can generate turnout on both sides, generate so much focus that it actually overshadows whatever national wave is going on, Republican or Democrat. This issue has the prospect of doing that.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of money coming into this.
Yes.
But
major.
Let's hit some of the legislative races. Yes. Should we give an overview first before getting into any of the key ones?
Well, yeah. I think that this was not as active of a year as usual as far as legislative primaries. In 2010, 10 out of the 17 Senate seats had anywhere from low-key to very high-intensity primaries. I'd say this year there were only really two primaries where the outcome was in doubt, the 2nd District in St. Charles and the 24th Republican primary in St. Louis County. And there were some House primaries as well, not many in the St. Louis area. I think there were really only 5 or 6 where the winner becomes the rep. And what kind of filled the void was some interesting local contest, whether it was the Franklin County Recorder of Deeds, which our good friend State Senator Brian Navis did not win, or a situation in St. Charles where Rich Christmer Sr. was actually seriously challenged by the former mayor of St. Charles. I believe that he won a stiff reelection fight. It was those types of races. Or in the city where, you know, resigned Recorder of Deeds Sharon Carpenter managed to win the Democratic nomination, proving that Quigley mania is running through the streets of St. Louis.
Well, but one of the biggest ones, which you wrote about, and I like to talk about this, is the Carter-Clay fight for a state rep seat, which probably actually the congressman was probably arguably more involved in that than anything else on the ballot.
Yeah, we talked about a little this last year or last week or so, and you know, the opponents of Josh Peters made this race about Lacey Clay and his political power. And they said it pretty explicitly that it was trying to basically show him up by defeating his protege. And Josh Peters won by about 10 percentage points. And just as if he would have lost, they would have probably said, oh, this shows that Lacey Clay doesn't have it anymore. I think we have to give credit to Lacey Clay and say, yeah, he does have it still, because he put his own money and his own time on the line
and
for
his,
this race.
He sent at least a couple people in to run field on that.
And it also is a credit to Josh Peters himself, who I said on this last show was an extremely impressive candidate. I think has the tools to be a very effective legislator in the Missouri General Assembly, even though he'll be in the minority. So I don't want to just make it about Lacey, because I think it was also him working hard. He won every ward, actually, in that, even the 27th ward by one vote, which shows that he obviously took this threat from Carter seriously. I mean, the Carter family has a very good record of electoral success. This is actually the first loss for the Carter family in anything since Tom Villa beat Paula Carter in 1991 for Board of Aldermen president. And just I really want to mention this briefly because it is just so disturbing. But there was just a reprehensible flyer that kind of went circulating. An anti-Peters one that you can read about it here or elsewhere that I think is very close to being libelous. And he might win a libel suit on that. So, you know, Carters have denied that they're involved with it. The TRO said that there was some involvement. I guess we'll find out in court about that. But, you know, we talked about how the Stanger-Dooley race was negative. That race got extremely negative,
extremely personal.
And, you know, I think we're all kind of glad when races like that come to an end, even though this was a really compelling and important race, in my opinion. And in the other races I mentioned, Bob Onder, the former state representative who left the legislature to run for Congress in 2008, won enormously over Chuck Gashenberger
in the second
and Vicki Schneider. in the second district
for state senate,
and that means he will be a state senator
because there's really
no Democratic
opposition
phone.
In November.
No, and then Jay Ashcroft, the son of John Ashcroft, won pretty decisively over Jack Spooner and Rob Hicks, but unlike Onder
in the Republican contest for 24th district state senate.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Unlike Onder, Ashcroft is by no means a lock to win this race. I think that. This race may become one of the most competitive in the state, and there's an assumption that Jill Shoup may have the edge because
she's the Democrat state rep who's the Democratic nominee.
She's raised a lot of money. She's working hard, and you know, I don't think he's a lock by any stretch of the imagination, but it'll be competitive.
I wasn't following this yesterday because I was so focused on the county executive's race, but looking at it now, in that primary – you actually had more Democratic voters voting in the Democratic primary where Shoup was uncontested than you had.
She won 100% of the vote.
Yes, but 16,000 people decided to cast Democratic ballots.
Yes.
And how many cast Republican ballots?
11,625.
See, so that has to give the Republicans pause a little bit too, because again, it's not just the percentage; it's also the numbers.
So, you know, in some other races, Mavis Thompson ended up very narrowly edging Jeffrey Boyd in the license collector race.
That's a loss for Mayor Slay.
Yeah, I wanted to just talk about this a little bit before we kind of end the show. In the past couple of cycles, Mayor Francis Slay has been very adept at endorsing people that win certain offices. I mean, I think in 2012, the only ones that he endorsed that didn't win were Martin Cassis against Michael Butler and Fred Wessels for treasurer. Everybody else he endorsed won. 2010, I think he basically had a perfect endorsing record. This time around, he endorsed Charlie Dooley, who lost badly. He endorsed Amendment 7, which lost badly in the city. He endorsed Jeffrey Boyd, who did not lose
very
as badly.
Narrowly. Very
and
narrowly.
I don't,
but still he lost.
He still lost. I don't know what happened in that contest. Now, to be fair, he did send money to Joshua Peters, and I think that was a de facto endorsement. And he also endorsed Carpenter, though I'm not really sure what role that played
because
in that.
He was the one who had drafted Florida, he then appointed as her temporary placement, and Florida has collected the signatures to run as independent. So you wonder if he's going to be endorsed, which one he's going to be endorsing in the fall.
Yeah, the reason I'm bringing this up is, you know, I questioned yesterday on Twitter whether these types of losses, especially the Dooley loss, was a significant political blow to Slay. And to some extent, Clay, because they'd put their political capital on the line to endorse Dooley. And Richard Callow, who is the mayor's longtime political aide, basically dismissed that out of hand and basically thought I was joking. So maybe I overstated it by saying it was a significant loss. But if we're going to give Slay credit for endorsing all these people that won in the past two election cycles, then you got to say that when he endorses three things that lose and two of them that lose pretty badly, it's not a net positive for him, even if it doesn't necessarily impact his political stock long term. I just want to throw that out there and see what you all think about that before we very tiredly depart the show.
Well, why don't we leave it at that? I think there's going to be a lot of debate about that.
I think it remains to be seen, but we should probably close things out here. But you... if this wasn't enough for you, you can go to stlpublicradio.org. We have a ridiculous amount of stories right now.
No, but they're ridiculously good.
Ridiculously
good. All of them.
We think very highly of ourselves.
Well, no, it's not just me, but I mean everybody. Awesome. And if nothing else, check out Brent's map.
To close us out here, you can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. Jason, you can be followed on Twitter.
Jay Rosenbaum.
Joe.
At Jay Manis. It's JMANNIES.
And we'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
So long.